Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MISD strives toward comprehensive literacy framework. Editor's note. The Reporter-Telegram talked with Midland ISD officials, including Superintendent Angelica Ramsey, about the changes coming to the district's elementary program. This week, we are looking at those components that will be part of the rebuilding of the reading program, including literacy specialists, the standardized programs, and expectations of the intersessional calendar that the MISD board debated last week. This article is written by Stuart Doreen. During a February meeting of the Midland ISD School Board, then Interim Superintendent Ann Dixon made a comment that surprised many interested in Midland ISD and its academic achievement. "What is our reading program?" Dixon said. "I don't know. Can anyone tell me? I haven't been able to find out." Midland ISD has struggled in the past few years to make gains when it comes to reading. Even this year, the board's goal progress measure 1.3 states the percentage of first grade students on track to read at grade level or above will increase to 71% by August 2023. The beginning of the year measurement this school year was 47%. The middle of the year progress measurement was 50%. The target for the end of the year is 63%. The board's goal progress measure 2.1 states that all third through eighth grade students scoring at the meets or master's level on a reading standards-based assessment will increase from 36% to 48% by August 2023. The beginning of the year measurement this school year was 28%. The middle of the year progress measurement was 27%. The target for the year is 44%. Dixon had offered straight talk with board members, MISD staff, and community members alike, and this was no different. Her comments were made during the conversation taking place about MISD's 2021-22 calendar and left many wondering, could it be possible that there wasn't a program for students even as young as kindergarten through second grade? When asked about this last week, Midland ISD Chief of Staff Katie Atkins said, there are resources, curriculum, and standards that are a part of a, quote, reading process, unquote, for all grade levels, but that the district is without a reliable, comprehensive literacy framework. That framework puts similar programs into place instead of the varying degrees of materials from one campus to another. After talking to Atkins and Superintendent Angelica Ramsey, it became apparent that more managed instruction will put more teachers, staff, and students on the same page moving forward. It also will help a district tinkering with daily instruction and working toward intersessional weeks that will give some students additional learning time when extra intervention is required. Atkins said that processes being developed will help teachers and literacy strategists go deeper into the problems that students are having, whether it is a decoding or comprehension issue. So when we're looking at what they're going to do for literacy, we also need to make sure that we are launching a very clear understanding of accomplishing comprehensive literacy framework, Atkins said. Atkins and Ramsey both said there are details to be fleshed out, but having the calendar approved last week will help nail down dates and details that the district can use in planning for the 2021-22 school year. We are going to spend the spring really working on not only what the plan looks like for the next 18 months, but what does the professional development need to be, Ramsey said. And we already have those initial plans in place, but we want to make sure that it's written so that we can publish it out, so our teachers and our parents and our community can understand that, at least to an extent, that there is a plan. What's part of the plan? Atkins said, for some, it is firming up the basics, the phonics, the phonemic awareness, early literacy, and working on those foundational pieces that build into literacy. We need to make sure we are launching a very clear understanding of a comprehensive literary framework, Atkins said. What are the pieces that have come into play to have a strong literacy program? This article is entitled, MCSO Made Half as Many Traffic Stops Last Year, by Caitlin Randall. The Midland County Sheriff's Office stopped half as many drivers last year as they did in 2019, according to a report presented to the Commissioner's Court on Friday. There were 1,597 traffic stops conducted by MCSO last year, compared to 3,001 the previous year. There were also about half as many arrests following traffic stops in 2020, 114, as there were in 2019, 201. The number of stops could have decreased because there was about 20% less traffic volume in Midland last year, according to a report from the Midland Police Department last month. That report stated there were about 40% less traffic accidents in 2020. A city spokesperson previously attributed the drop in traffic to the COVID-19 pandemic and economic slowdown in the oil and gas industry. The report released Friday by MCSO included a breakdown of traffic stops by ethnicities of the drivers. Of the 1,597 drivers stopped in 2020, 783 were Hispanic, 49%, 656 were white, 41%, and 146 were black, 9%. Those percentages are on par with ethnicities of stopped drivers reported last year. But Hispanic drivers continue to be stopped at a rate disproportionate to race demographics. Driver's license data for Midland County from 2019 shows that 22% of registered drivers are Hispanic, 67% are white, and 8% are black. Last year's report also showed more men than women were stopped by traffic patrols. Men accounted for 1,225 of the stops, 77%, and women accounted for 372 stops, 23%. The majority of stops, 1,364, were for moving or vehicle violations, while 165 were for violating the law, and 68 were because of pre-existing knowledge. A search was conducted during 251 of the stops, and contraband was found during 92 of those searches. None of the stops involved physical force that resulted in bodily injury, according to the report. This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled, As a Community Newspaper, Our Space is Your Space, by Stuart Doreen, editor. The Reporter-Telegram had its first meeting with the community group, and the pleasure was all mine. We talked about the current identity of Midland, how it is community-minded, hospitable, and independent. We talked about the needs, the opportunities, and the narratives, accurate and otherwise, about our community. We talked about race, wealth, education, and had first discussions about what Midland can be. We expect, before our monthly meetings are complete, that we will have more direction from these 10 community members about where they see Midland going. We even had our first op-ed this weekend from First Baptist Senior Pastor Darren Wood. He used our space this past week to spread the message of his church's First Cares program. But a reason for us to bring this group together also was to have better a conversation about how the Reporter-Telegram could be a better community resident. They reminded us that we needed to stay true to our roots, to what the first Reporter-Telegram publisher, T. Paul Barron, told our readers in the first edition of the Reporter-Telegram in 1929. The Reporter-Telegram will give close cooperation with churches, civic organizations, schools, and institutions of the community, assisting each one impartially. Such organizations are intended to make use of the columns of the Reporter-Telegram. That is what a good community newspaper does. That is why one goal from our first meeting is to put together a community calendar worthy of Midland. A calendar where people will learn more about events like Community Worship Center's Project Give Back that took place last week. What was Project Give Back? They gave away clothes for those in need last weekend in Washington Park. In a community like Midland, with more nonprofits per capita than just about any community in Texas, this calendar will become a staple for those organizations needing to spread their message to control the narrative in our community. So, the question is, what can we do for you? What information do you have for us? Consider this an invitation to make use of the columns of the Reporter-Telegram. There will be more as we learn about Midland and about ourselves and how we can make a greater impact. But for now, I say we are off to a good start. Send your information to sdoreen@hearstnp.com or call me at 352-0605. I will get back to you and let you know what we can do. The 10 members of our community-based board are, in alphabetical order, Matt Galindo, Pastor Doug Lamb, Latoya Mayberry, Roy Nelson, Lucy Cisniega, Carla Smith, Kristen Vasquez, Stephen Viela, Kate Williamson, and Pastor Darren Wood. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. Emma Valencia. Emma Valencia, 87, peacefully at home, went home to the Lord Monday, March 1st, 2021. Viewing will be held Wednesday, March 3rd, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Following a rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A funeral mass will be conducted at 10 a.m. Thursday, March 4th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Emma was born in Aguas Calientes, Mexico, to parents Paula and Jose Duran, March 22, 1933. She is preceded in death by her husband, Jose P. Valencia, as well as several sisters and brothers. Survivors include sisters Ofelia Flores and Consuelo Montes of Midland, Dominga D. Botello of Farmington, New Mexico, son Oscar Valencia, daughters Lala Chabera and Pauline Valencia of Midland, daughter Susie Navarrete of Tyler, Texas, 8 grandchildren, 9 great-grandchildren, along with numerous nieces, nephews, and extended family. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Star Hospice of Odessa. Funeral Mass is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net. Or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Gregory Dwayne Gerber. Gregory Dwayne Gerber, Odessa, Texas, passed away on February 28, 2021. Greg was born on October 14, 1956, to Eldon and Joyce Gerber in Lamar, Colorado. Greg is survived by his loving wife, Loretta, 2 daughters, Heidi Palumbo and Kelly Collins, 2 sons, Tyson Gerber and Casey Collins. He was a loving brother to Cammie Potts, Tina Colson, Larry Gerber, Laura Newbro, and Diana Martinez. He is also survived by numerous nieces, nephews, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, March 5th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home with Reverend David Newton officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Hans Robert Hansen. Hans Robert Hansen, 88, of Midland, Texas, passed away on February 27, 2021. Hans R. Hansen was born on March 13, 1932, at the family farm north of Moreland, Kansas, to Mabel and Henry Hansen. He is survived by his three sons and their wives, John Hansen, Chris and Judy Hansen, and Noel and Stella Hansen, 8 grandchildren, 9 great-grandchildren, and many nieces and nephews. Hans was preceded in death by his wife, Jane N. Hansen, parents Mabel and Henry Hansen, brother Wayne Hansen, and sister Patricia Hansen. A family graveside service will be held at a date to be determined. Online condolences may be shared at www.schoolerfuneralhome.com. Joe Manon Talley, 1922 to 2021. Joe Manon Talley passed away peacefully in his sleep at his home on the morning of February 28th at the age of 98. Viewings will be held at Nally Picklinwell's Funeral Home and Crematory on Wednesday, March 3rd and Thursday, March 4th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Services will be at 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 9th at Wilson Little Funeral Home, 127 South Canadian, Purcell, Oklahoma. Interment to follow at Lexington Cemetery, Lexington, Oklahoma. Joe M. Talley was born December 9, 1922, in Blanchard, Oklahoma, to parents Birch Lester Talley and Effie Martin Talley. Joe is survived by his daughter Bonnie, husband of Midland, son Dan Talley of Hobbs, New Mexico, 3 grandchildren, 2 great-grandsons, brothers Lyndall Talley, Lester Talley, Bob Talley, and Vic Talley, all of Oklahoma, and sister Rita Faye Spann of Atlanta, Georgia. He was preceded in death by his wife Mildred Talley just 3 months ago, daughter Judith Lynn Talley, parents Effie Martin Talley and Birch Lester Talley, siblings Jack Talley, Herb Talley, Donnie Talley, Vera Mae Hindman, Anna Lee Cox, and Darlene Autry. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorial donations be made to Midland Meals on Wheels, Visiting Angels, and the Veterans Association. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklinwell's Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Margarita Reyes Ramirez. On Monday, February 22nd, Margarita Sugar Reyes Ramirez went home to be with the Lord. She was 89 years old. She was born on June 10, 1931, to Crescencio and Gomesinda Reyes. She was a lifelong resident of Midland, Texas. Margaret is preceded in death by her parents, Crescencio and Gomesinda Reyes, her two sons, Frank and Jimmy Ramirez, a grandson, Frank Pancho Ramirez Jr., two great-grandsons, Oscar Kobe Lozano and Elijah Ramirez, a brother, Daniel Reyes, and a sister, Jessie Chewy Salgado. Margaret is survived by two grandsons, Juan A. Ramirez, Tito, spouse, Savannah Hernandez, Nick Ramirez, a granddaughter, Yvonne Irene Ramirez, 8 great-grandchildren. She is also survived by 5 sisters, Inez Ramirez, Silvestre Gavia, Paulina Sanchez, Josefina Blackwell, and Dora Ruiz, 1 brother, Augustin Reyes, and numerous nieces and nephews. A viewing will be held on Thursday, March 4th at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. A rosary will be recited on Friday, March 5th at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be held at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church on Saturday, March 6th at 12 noon, followed by graveside services at Rest Haven Memorial Park. The family would like to express their gratitude towards all the doctors, nurses, hospice, family, and friends. Special thanks to Juan Tito, Kathy Fino, Christina Cruz, Yvonne Ramirez, and Savannah Hernandez for the tender, loving care. Please keep in mind that a face mask will be required. We want everyone to be safe and mindful of others. Note, Margaret's favorite color is pink. Feel free to wear. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Robert Bob D. Caldwell. Robert Bob D. Caldwell passed from this world to heaven on February 28th after having the opportunity to spend precious time with his beloved wife and each of his children. Bob was born January 21st, 1934, to Iva and Walter Caldwell in Independence, Kansas, as one of 10 children. Bob is survived by his wife Sandra, his sister Mary, his brother Jim, children Rob Caldwell and wife Renee, Rhonda Visitainer and husband Nick, Becky Wright and husband Mark, Rick Caldwell and wife Michelle, stepson Kobe Dykes and wife Tracy, 12 grandchildren, 2 great-nephews, and a great-grandson. Bob is preceded in death by his parents, Iva and Walter, and his brothers and sisters, Charles, Carl, Jerry, Pat, Edna Mae, Elva, and Emma. We will celebrate his life on Thursday, March 4th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, 3800 North Big Spring in Midland. Your expressions of love and shared grief with flowers are deeply appreciated. Another meaningful way to honor Bob's life and memory is to donate to the Wounded Warrior Project. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Terry Golden. Terry Golden of Odessa, Texas, passed from this life on Saturday, February 27th, at the age of 68. Terry was born September 27th, 1952, in Colorado City, to Doris and Howard Golden. Terry is preceded in death by his son Michael Golden, father Howard Golden, brother Richard Golden, father-in-law James Israel, mother-in-law Ann Israel, and sister-in-law Shirley Carrigan. Terry is survived by his wife, Paula Israel Golden, daughter Marcy Pedersen, daughter Carrie Huggins, and husband West Huggins, and grandsons Curran Pedersen, Jaron Pedersen, Walter Huggins, and Trevor Huggins. Terry is also survived by his mother, Doris Golden, sister Linda Cooper and husband Ronnie, sister Neva Brown and husband Tom, brother Keith Golden and wife Natalie, sister-in-law Mary Arnold, sister-in-law Irene Stennett, and husband Terry, along with many nieces and nephews. Visitation will be held Thursday, March 4th, from 5:30 until 7 p.m. at the branch at NPW in Midland. Funeral services will be held in the chapel at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home Friday, March 5th at 2 p.m. Burial will immediately follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Terry will be greatly missed by all his friends and family. Per their wishes, in lieu of flowers, please make memorial donations to the University Medical Center Timothy J. Harner Burn Center in Lubbock, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Chapel of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Urbano D. Rios. Urbano D. Rios of Midland was called home to be with our Father in Heaven on Wednesday, February 17th. A private rosary and funeral will be held at St. Stephen's Catholic Church on Friday and Saturday, March 5th and 6th, 2021. Urbano was born on April 2nd, 1938 in San Carlos, Chihuahua, Mexico, to Inez Rios Sr. and Lucia Dominguez Rios. Urbano is survived by his wife, Elidia Rios of Midland, and 6 children, Elizabeth Torres and her husband, Vidal of Midland, Esther Carrillo and her husband, Calistro Jr. of San Antonio, Donna Rios of El Paso, Herlinda Melendez of Midland, Glenn Rios and his partner, Leah Hepner of Austin, J. Joanne Hawkes and her husband Mark of Midland, as well as 12 grandchildren. Urbano is also survived by his last surviving sibling, Alina Fierro, and spoken endearingly of his many nieces, nephews, and other extended family members. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Viola Phillips Claiborne. Viola Phillips Claiborne, 91, of Coleman, died Tuesday, February 23rd in Wichita Falls. Funeral service will be 2 p.m. Saturday, March 6th at Stevens Funeral Home Chapel. Following the funeral service, there will be a short graveside service and burial at Coleman City Cemetery. The funeral service will be live streamed and available to view for up to 90 days. Go to www.livingmemorials.com and select the obituary page for Viola. The live stream will be located at the bottom of her obituary page. Services are entrusted to Stevens Funeral Home. She was born Viola Pearl Phillips on September 16, 1929, in Cross Plains, to William Henry Phillips and Lena Mae Woods Phillips. Viola leaves behind her four children, Patrick Michael Claiborne, Terry Dean Claiborne and wife Sheila, Patricia Lynn Claiborne Cloud and husband Jerry, Evelyn K. Claiborne White and husband Stephen. Also surviving are 10 grandchildren and 25 great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her husband Harold Claiborne in 2012, six brothers and sisters, Elva Phillips, Joe Phillips, Cecil Phillips, Stanley Phillips, Gina Marie Phillips, and Ophelia Phillips. The family has requested that memorial donations in memory of Viola be sent to your favorite charity. Remembrances, condolences, and messages of comfort can be expressed to the family at www.livingmemorials.com. Stephen's Funeral Home is honored to serve the Claiborne family. Jackson Thomas Gray. Jackson Thomas Gray of Kerrville, Texas, gained his angel wings on February 25th. He was born in Fredericksburg to Rainey and Tommy Gray on November 24th, 2020. He is survived by his parents, Rainey and Tommy Gray, brother Easton Gray, sister Camry, and husband Dylan Tubbs, and son Maverick of Kingsland, Texas, grandparents Brandy and Chris Guerin of Midland, great-grandmother Nancy Davis of Midland, great-grandfather David Chandler of Cloudcroft, New Mexico, great-great-grandmother Evelyn Stewart of Midland, as well as many aunts and uncles and great-aunts and great-uncles. Services will be held at Grimes Funeral Chapels in Kerrville on Wednesday, March 3rd at 10 a.m., Interment will follow at Garden of Memories. Condolences may be made at www.grimesfuneralchapels.com by selecting the Send Condolences link. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Grimes Funeral Chapels of Kerrville. Marcos Antonio Ruiz. Marcos Antonio Ruiz, 15, of Midland, passed away on Friday, February 19th. Visitation will be from 1 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Monday, March 1st and Tuesday, March 2nd at Abundant Life Ministries Church, 511 South Stonewall, Midland, 79701. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, March 3rd at Abundant Life Ministries Church, with Pastor Jesse Arispe officiating. Marcos Antonio Ruiz was born in Midland to Amanda Marie Murillo on February 28, 2005. Marcos was preceded in death by his grandfather, Ignacio Camacho, great-grandmother Martina Lozoya Rivera, and great-grandfather Jesse Manuel Leon. He is survived by his mother, Amanda Marie Murillo, sister Jaylee Marie Murillo, brother Daniel Silverio Murillo, Aunt Alicia Cheyenne Castaneda, Uncle Felix Baron Hall, grandparents Ermelinda Baron Hernandez and Miguel Castaneda. The family wishes to extend our sincere thanks to Marlena Flores, Abundant Life Ministries, and all those who helped and contributed. Death Notices. Martha Shepherd. Martha Shepherd, age 80, passed away on February 27th in Austin. Services are pending. Arrangements by Weed Corley Fish Funeral Home, Austin, 512-452-8811. Remembrances may be shared at www.wcfish.com.
Odessa American, Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. Abbott opens Texas, lifts mask mandate. Radcliffe Clinic continues to plug along with second dose, by Laura Dennis. The caption reads, a healthcare worker administers the second dose of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine Tuesday morning at the Radcliffe Stadium mass vaccination site. The mass vaccination site will be open for those looking to get the second shot of the vaccine from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. through Friday, March 5th. Texas Governor Greg Abbott said Tuesday that Texas businesses can reopen at 100% starting next Wednesday. Abbott made the announcement during a news conference in Lubbock. Every business that wants to open should be open, Abbott said. The governor said he is also rescinding the state's mask mandate. Abbott said the state is in a much better position than when the pandemic started last year. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravana urged Odessans to listen to the words the governor used and to continue using the tools we have learned to use the last year, including washing hands, social distancing, and wearing masks to have both personal and social responsibilities. We have to hope our community has learned something and follow through on the advice that has gotten us here. Saravana pointed to lower numbers of new COVID cases as good news, but said now is not the time to let the guard down. The Abbott announcement came on the first day of a Radcliffe Mass COVID-19 vaccine clinic to hand out second doses or booster shots of the Pfizer COVID vaccine. As of 3 p.m., about 3,000 boosters had been given at the Medical Center Hospital event. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Christian Abbott Timmons said the first day had gone well, despite long lines. She said once inside the gates of Radcliffe, that seeking the second shot waited about 30 minutes. She said those seeking the vaccine during the rest of the week can make sure to the wait shorter by remembering to bring their vaccine cards. She said those who received a first dose somewhere else can get the second vaccine at Radcliffe, but the vaccine card must be presented. The clinic continues from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. today, Thursday and Friday. Up in the air. The caption reads, the Odessa City Council discussed approval of a $1.5 million grant to the Ellen Noel Art Museum of the Permian Basin to help the museum pay for a proposed $12 million building renovation and expansion project Tuesday via virtual work session. The museum is requesting a $1.5 million financial assistance grant from the Odessa Development Corporation, according to an application filled by museum officials. The bulk of the project funding would come from donations raised through a capital campaign effort already underway by the museum, campaign chairman Austin Keith said. Council Mixed on Museum Grant by Federico Martinez. Odessa City Council members on Tuesday expressed mixed emotions about the Ellen Noel Art Museum's grant request for $600,000 to help pay for a proposed $12 million building renovation and expansion project. Council discussed the grant request for more than 1 hour during Tuesday's work session, but did not reach a consensus on the issue or vote to place it on next week's meeting agenda. Just because we have a project that is fundable, should it be funded with economic dollars? Resident Chris Crow said, echoing several similar sentiments expressed by council. I think there are other entities that are better suited to fund this project. If council approves this, what about other museums in town? Are we going to give hundreds of thousands of dollars to other museums? Museum officials had originally requested $1.5 million in their financial assistance grant application, but the Odessa Development Corporation is recommending $600,000. Wesley Burnett, Director of Development for the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, explained during the council's work session meeting. Councilman Mark Mata raised the possibility of using hotel occupancy tax dollars instead to help fund the museum project. Hotel occupancy tax dollars are restricted funds that can only be used to promote tourism efforts. The hotel tax was a major campaign issue last year for Mata and Mayor Javier Hovind, who were critical of the previous council's decision to spend $80,000 on two Christmas trees that were placed at the Convention Center and the Marriott Hotel. Mata and Hovind, along with other residents, complained that those funds could have been better used. Is this a good example of using hotel tax funds? Putting heads in beds? Mata asked Burnett and City Manager Mark Marrero. Quite possibly, Marrero responded. I'll get with the city attorney to talk about it. Councilwoman Dietra White expressed reservations about Mata's idea. White said using the hotel tax dollars could deplete those funds. To take that much money, $600,000, from the motel hotel fund would make quite a dent in the fund, White said. Museum Director Sheila Perry said a renovated and expanded facility would allow the museum to construct new and larger galleries, put students in more classrooms, attract more visiting artists and speakers, and provide room for major exhibitions. It would attract new residents and visitors to Odessa, she added. Perry said the current museum is in dire need of improvements. The museum is literally falling apart, Perry said. It's being held together by duct tape. The bulk of the project's funding will come from donations raised through capital campaign effort already underway, Perry said. The campaign has currently raised $2.2 million. Museum officials hope to raise the $12 million in time for a 2022 groundbreaking and reopen the improved museum in 2023, Perry said. Councilwoman Mary Willis and Steve Thompson both expressed support for approving the $600,000 grant request. Both council members called it a quality of life issue. When people move into Odessa, they want to know what's here, Willis said. Families want to know what's here that will improve the quality of life for their kids. What the city offers should be as diverse as we can be, Willis said. It's not always about dollars and cents, Thompson chimed in. Council did agree that they would return to live council meetings, but haven't decided if they will start March 9th or the 23rd. Hovind said he will discuss the issue with City Manager Marrero and make the decision later this week. When council resumes their live meetings, they will be separated by dividers to promote social distancing, Marrero said. Council was divided over whether they or residents should still be required to wear face coverings during meetings. If we go back to live meetings, I would ask that we would respect each other and continue masking, Willis said. Hovind argued that trying to require people to wear masks could open up the city to litigation because Texas Governor Greg Abbott on Tuesday announced he's lifting the face covering mandate and will be allowing businesses to open up to 100% capacity beginning March 10th. People should take personal responsibility to mask if they feel like, Hovind said. City Attorney Natasha Brooks told council it will have to vote to rescind the mask mandate, which the former council voted to make a city ordinance. Council did agree to continue holding virtual work sessions for the immediate future. UTPB host Rachel Justice Panel. OA News at OAOA.com. The University of Texas Permian Basin's Ad Hoc Committee on Systemic Racism will engage in community discussion on promoting transformative justice at 7 p.m. today in LL001 in the Library Lecture Hall on campus. The committee was developed within the Department of Literature and Languages, a news release said. One hallmark of the committee's endeavors is to address racial bias. In this respect, Ad Hoc Committee Chairman Marlon Fick announced that the panel will address How Can I Make a Difference? A panel discussion on racism. Fellow committee member and PhD in the Literature and Languages Department, Myra Tatum Salcedo, in a press release described transformative justice as going beyond mere tolerance to acknowledge that there is a problem and then attempting to listen, understand, encourage empathy, and make a change. Panelists will include Derek Katzum, James Fuller, and Dr. Skip Batch, the release said. The discussion will open with remarks from the panelists, followed by a question and answer session and an open discussion. Panelists include James E. Fuller of Midland. Fuller is an associate member of the Texas Caucus of Black School Board Members and vice president of the West Texas Regional 18 Education Service Center. A longtime advocate of academics, equality, and equity for all, Fuller attended segregated and desegregated schools in San Angelo Independent School District. An English professor at Midland College for 42 years, Fuller was elected to the Midland Independent School District Board of Trustees in 1988 and served through January 4, 2021. He is the longest-serving MISD trustee in the history of the district. An educator by profession, he is a Texas Association of Schools Boards, certified Master School Board Trustee. He worked with the Texas Education Agency to create the district's Lone Star Governance Plan. Fuller is a former junior and high school instructor with Lubbock. His wife and collaborator, Robney Hawker Fuller, is the founder and CEO of the Midland Black Chamber of Entrepreneurs, Incorporated, Midland African American Entrepreneurs Chamber of Commerce, and the founder of the Midland African American Roots Historical Cultural Arts Council, Incorporated. For 15 years, the Fullers have sponsored the local UT Austin Barbara Jordan Essay Competition, which has honored all ethnicities as competition winners. Derek Charles Katzum is professor of history at UTPB and the Kathleen Cosper Dunnigan Professor in the Humanities. He is Senior Research Associate at Rhodes University in Grahamstown, South Africa, where he spent 2016 as the Hugh Lee May Fellow in the Humanities. He is the author of Freedom's Main Line, The Journey of Reconciliation and the Freedom Rides, 2009, Beyond the Pitch, The Spirit, Culture, and Politics of Brazil's 2014 World Cup, 2014, and Bleeding Red, A Red Sox Fan's Diary of the 2004 season, 2005. His latest book, Flashpoint, How a Little-Known Sporting Event Fueled America's Anti-Apartheid Movement, will be released later this year and tells the story of the South African national rugby team's 1981 U.S. tour and its impact on America's apartheid protests. Dr. Skip Batch, a nationally known medical professor and anesthesiologist at Odessa Regional Medical Center Hospital, is also on the group. For more information, contact Vic, Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Literature and Languages at 432-552-2303. 396 days. For 396 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news. By the numbers, Ector County, 16,351 total cases, 335 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 1 student, 2 staff. Midland County, 16,236 total cases, 246 deaths. Texas, 2,660,791 total cases, 43,909 deaths. U.S. cases, 28,456,860 total confirmed and 513,122 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the CISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Also from the front page, COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will be administering booster second doses shots of the Pfizer vaccines. A booster shot drive-through clinic will take place from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. today through Friday at Ratliff Stadium. This drive-through is only for those who need the second or booster shot and who received a first dose between January 24th and February 10th at Ratliff. Pre-registration is not required. Bring your vaccination and ID card. For those who received their first shot after February 10th at Ratliff, will not get a second vaccine at Ratliff, but rather at Odessa Regional Medical Center. An email with dates and times will be sent to those who need that second shot or booster. Anyone who can't make these dates or received their first dose at Ratliff Stadium on or after February 24th will receive their booster shots from ORMC and will be contacted by them to set up an appointment. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 520 East 6th Street, will be administering COVID-19 vaccines. Scheduled dates for vaccines, Pfizer booster second dose, ECISD only Thursday. Pfizer first dose vaccinations today and Friday, all by appointment only. To make an appointment at ORMC, call 432-582-8549. No walk-ins will be offered on the scheduled dates. Vaccines are free of charge while supplies last. Visit www.odessaregionalmedicalcenter.org/vaccine. Walgreens has limited COVID-19 vaccines available in select areas. For eligibility requirements or more information, visit tinyurl.com/YHR6NEUD. HEB pharmacies are administering the COVID-19 vaccine based on state and federal eligibility guidelines in select areas. To sign up, updates, or information, visit vaccine.heb.com. The CVS stores are administering the COVID-19 vaccine by appointment only in select stores based on local eligibility guidelines. For updates or information, visit cvs.com, CVS Pharmacy app, or call 800-746-7287. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies are administering the COVID-19 vaccine based on state and federal eligibility guidelines in select areas. For updates, visit www.walmart.com/CP/1228302 or www.samsclub.com/pharmacy.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.